Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buchanani. Chris, you ready for an hour of Penn State football talk after a really nice 28-13 win in Madison?
I am ready for a celebratory discussion, Jim, and teeing up what is going to be one of the funnest, most exciting, and improbably most relaxing lead-ups all week long to an Ohio State game that I can remember.
And why is it so relaxing?
Because the beauty, Jim, of the new 12-team playoff format is that Penn State can certainly benefit itself in a multitude of ways by winning this game. But if they don't, it's not the end of the world. It's not the end of the season. It's not the end of anything. So the Buckeyes are coming in here on Saturday for Big Noon Kickoff. Boo! With all the pressure on them in a variety of reasons, and maybe we'll touch on that before the end of the show. But in reality, I'm sure internally the expectations are high among the team and coaching staff. But the reality, when you get down to brass tacks, is that there's no pressure on Penn State. And that's a pretty good place to be when you're playing a team like this. But Wisconsin, really, I get it. We can wrap up Wisconsin first.
Yeah, we'll hit on Ohio State a little bit later.
It is nice, though,
show.
Right, to finally be able to talk about the Ohio State game and not have to add any other caveats. Oh, well, you know, a road trip to Camp Randall. Or, well, we got to get through USC first. No, we're done. We got through all of it. We did it. I can't believe it, honest to God. I can't believe we got through all of those tests, but we did it. We're 7-0.
And Penn State got through it. Ohio State did not.
Yeah.
They lost. And again, I'm jumping the gun here talking about it, but they're the ones with the loss on their resume. And they're the ones with the less than stellar performance this past weekend against Nebraska.
Yeah, boy, they did not look great. And to their credit and to Matt Rule's credit, Nebraska got off the mat after getting absolutely pasted by Indiana 2 weeks ago, and they played much better, especially defensively. So let's not take away from what the Cornhuskers did to just say it was Ohio State not playing a great game. Although, to be honest, that was a huge part of it. That is a much, much better football team they have in Columbus than the one Matt Rule has in Nebraska right now. And they also got a little help from the Zebras, you know, not a huge shock. That's kind of par for the course at this point. But let me put it this way. I will caution the audience to not get too bullish on Penn State's chances because Ohio State looked bad versus Nebraska. College football, different team from week to week. I think both teams are going to give the other one their best shot this weekend.
I think they will, and I keep saying it, but yes, we will get to Ohio State. Let's give the Wisconsin game its due.
Indeed.
Chris, you know what? This was the ultimate trap game for James Franklin and the troops. It was away on the road, a tough physical Wisconsin team. You're going into Madison. You got to play it at night, and we all know night game makes the crowd a bit rowdier, makes the whole environment tougher. After the bye, we know what James's record is after a bye. If you don't know, it's been bad.
Yeah, we'll talk about that, I'm sure, but go on.
And here, the trap game coming before Ohio State, everything as a Penn State fan that you look at and – are fearful of were all combined into this game at Camp Randall. And the first half, by the way, just fit totally into the narrative, Chris.
It did. Now, I think till we got time to play the game, Jim, the whole trap game status, I found to be somewhat questionable, despite myself saying that you could look at it as a trap game on obligatory. And that's for a couple of reasons. I think, first of all, Wisconsin has enough brand value, right, that you respect that team you're playing, no matter who's wearing the jerseys. Just the fact that you know you're playing Wisconsin, they have been good enough for long enough that, oh, we're playing Wisconsin, that'll get your attention. I actually thought it worked to Penn State's advantage in a number of ways, that it was a night game versus maybe kind of a sleepy nooner kickoff. That's going to be like 11 a.m. Biological clock time for the Nittany Lions. I thought that that added some stakes to it and probably brought a little more energy and juice into the whole affair that worked against the trap game concept. And here's the other thing. Everybody called it a trap game so many damn times. I have this theory that once you call something a trap game 75,000 times, it's not a trap game anymore. The comparison I used on X was the Illinois game from last year. It was so obviously a potential trap game that it couldn't be a trap game because everybody just kept saying over and over and over. And Kevin, my co-host, made a good point too. That's probably too talented a team to be a legit trap. So, but I get the point. And yeah, the first half was utter misery, not unfamiliar to Penn State fans throughout this season so far. Although again, I'll reiterate, the last time Penn State was a second half team, they won the Big Ten. So if this is the way we got to do it, I will gladly take it.
Well, we'll talk about that a bit later, how they seem to dominate in the second half. And actually, well, let me ask you the question right now is, do you pat them on the back for being so good in the second half, or do you kick them in the butt for not being a first half team, for starting so slow and having so many issues?
Yes, I do.
Both, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, you can't – well, I was just going to say – you can't keep doing this, but I just cited an example of an entire season when Penn State did just keep doing it. I let me say this. It reminds me a little bit of the problems we had with the offsides penalties early in the season. If you remember, that was chronic through the first like 3-4 games of the season. And it got to the point where early on, everyone was thinking, you know, conventional wisdom is they're just going to clean this up. It's fine. We got an early bye week. You got guys adjusting to a new defensive scheme, Abdul Carter adjusting to a new position. It's all going to shake out. And then, you know, you're into the fifth week of the season, fourth game of the year, and it's still happening. And you start to think, well, maybe this is just a cost of doing business for Penn State in 2024. And now they seem to have gotten it under control. So this kind of reminds me of that, where, you know, we kept thinking, oh, they'll figure it out. They'll figure it out. Now, maybe that we have finally gotten to the point, Jim, where we've decided to just settle in and accept it, just like they did with the offsides penalties. They'll surprise us and get it fixed down the stretch here this season. But I Noble doesn't buy that. He said last week on the show on Obligatory that he thinks this is it. This is the identity of the team. And I'm paraphrasing here, but he just basically said, look, sometimes a team will take on an identity and you don't even really understand why. It's inexplicable. The talent is there. The coaching is there, but you just sort of fall into this pattern. And over time, it's like a groove or a butt groove in the couch or whatever. it compounds. The more familiar it becomes, the more difficult it is to change. And so I'm not quite ready to commit to that. This is just the, you know, a la 2016 identity of the team, second half team the entire season long. But with each passing week, that becomes more and more likely, right?
Well, Chris, every game when they start slow, you could pinpoint the reasons, okay, that, oh, it happened because of this play.
This is a good point.
Yeah, a drop pass here or there. So,
and it's not the same thing from week to week.
Right. You know, that's the thing. It's like, oh, in this game, they dropped the pass that would have kept that first drive going. So they shot themselves in the foot with that. The next game, oh, it's a penalty. But at what point does even the fact that the issues are different, that it's still like, looking at this game specifically, both offense, defense, and I'll even throw in special teams. You start with the defense. That they look like they're going to get a three and out. They create a third and long situation. and give up the first down. Okay, fine, we can live with that. You get to another third and long situation, you perform, you force them to punt. What happens? It wasn't even a planned fake punt, and the punter runs for a first down, and ultimately Wisconsin scores. Yet you felt like the defense, Penn State's defense, actually played pretty well. They played well enough to get off the field without allowing points, and they did. Now you give the offense the ball. They march down the field. From that point, you're saying, well, this Penn State offense is better than, you know, what we saw from Wisconsin. They're the better team. They march right down the field. They're going to score a touchdown, Chris. Then what happens? A really good third down call. Julian Flunk, he's wide open, Chris. Chris, you catch that ball.
Well, let's not be too hasty, Jim.
And Julian Fleming, he drops it. Then they still have the ability to overcome it. But on the fourth down sneak, the snap gets fumbled.
Right.
So, Chris, it's all these mistakes. They're self-inflicted. And like you said, it's different game to game. But at what point is it a trend?
Well, I mean, it's already a trend. But to me, the one thing with football is, you know, you love baseball analogies on this show, Jim. You get a long enough season in baseball that you get sufficient sample size, right? You don't get that in football. We're only seven games into the year. And to me, what you just laid out there, that it's different factors every single week, that leads you to believe that over a long enough time horizon, this can all come out in the wash. And to the extent that their momentum is a thing, this has been an online discussion. Does momentum exist? James talked about it in his post-game press conference. I'm with James Franklin. 100% momentum exists. And so if you can just have one game where you don't have one of those or two of those things go wrong, and instead they flip in the other direction, it's kind of like turnover luck just flattens out over time. I think that could flatten out over time. Then you just need one game like that, and then you can have momentum in the other direction.
Well, you brought up a good point about at what point is this a small sample size and, yeah, a handful of games. It's seven games. It's still a handful of games. So are we still looking at it's happenstance, small sample size, or is it a trend? When we come back, though, I want to respond to you mentioning baseball, because as soon as you do that, Chris, you know I'm going to have a response when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris Buccanani. I am Jim Galante. It's quarter number two of our show. And Chris, we talked about it already. Upcoming game against Ohio State. The following week, it's whiteout week versus Washington. And if you are still looking for a place to stay, looking for accommodations in state college for either one of those games, I got the solution for you. GoPSURV.com. This is where they have the RV lot. But here's the cool thing. You don't need to have your own RV. Just drive your own car there. Mark and his crew, they have RV set up and ready for you right there. All you got to do is show up. You get to stay from Friday through Sunday. They like to say it's a weekend of tailgating interrupted by a football game. I think the best part of it, too, might be the shuttle. You don't have to worry about the hassle of parking, getting a parking pass. They'll take you right there to the game, pick you up afterwards. If you need more information, just go to gopsurv.com or you could call 800 519-8467. You'll talk to Mark, and Mark will be able to help you out. They still have openings for both the Ohio State game and the whiteout game with Washington. All right, Chris, let's get back. I want to address a comment you made. You said, I like baseball, and I do. Love baseball, and you talked about how the things settle down over a long season. It's a marathon in baseball. The fact is, do you know who Bill James is?
I do.
Very good. Well, he used to write an annual book on baseball called The Baseball Abstract. It's sabermetrics, which is the study of baseball statistics, which essentially has changed the entire game of baseball. And he was the first one to say this. Everyone talks about it's a long season, 160 games, things even out. He said, actually, they don't. There is such a thing as being lucky or unlucky over 160 games. So I think that could also be the case over a very small, much smaller sample size of seven games. So I don't know yet if this is a trend that they struggle in the first half. Then, as you said, they make different kinds of mistakes that cause the issues, or is it just coincidence? I actually wonder if it's a little bit, you use the term momentum. I believe in momentum also. And if you want to talk momentum in this game, how about an interception return for a touchdown, completely turning the game around?
It's funny. I was watching this game. Keith Conlon, the Goon, did a watch party. He's the first one of these events that he's done. It was super cool and very successful. We got to watch the game at the Letterman's Lounge in Beaver Stadium, which was almost 100% awesome, except if you follow the news at all, you know Trump was doing a rally across the street at the Bryce Jordan Center. So I basically had to park in Timbuktu so I could just walk there because I didn't want to deal with any of the chaos around the BJC. So other than that, it was great. And I'm sitting there watching the game with Goon, and not 30 seconds before that play, I said, the offense is going to be limited because at that point, Bo was still having his, you know, feeling it out period. Like we need to talk about Bo Pupula a lot.
We will.
But at that point, you really didn't know what you were going to get from the guy. You didn't even know if he could throw the football, honest to God. And I said, the defense is playing so well. We can stymie their offense, but they got to score points. We got to force a turnover to get a very short field here. Or just get a pick six, and then boom, Jalen Reed, who is quickly emerging as not just one of the stars of this team, but a guy who, as my friend and co-host Kevin Horn pointed out on Twitter, depending on how this season goes, could be enshrined in program lore with that pick six. It happens, and that was it. I mean, for all intents and purposes, it felt like the game was over when that play happened.
Most definitely, and that does give you the thought that momentum is real, because after that, just the complete tone changed, that now you're playing with the lead, just felt different. You know that it felt different for Wisconsin. Just to get sidetracked before we talk about Bo Pribula, which I really want to spend a lot of time doing, boy, that Wisconsin quarterback is not good. The receivers drop a lot of balls. And Penn State had two quarterbacks on the field that day that were better than Wisconsin's quarterback. And I was ready to say Wisconsin's starter, but I know he was not the opener starter.
I have this theory that sometime back in the 1980s, when the Cold War was still going on and the federal government was just pumping unbelievable amounts of money into all the big R1 land grant universities. You know, Penn State gets a lot of money from the Department of Defense, and so do all the other big research Big Ten schools. They started messing around in Madison, Wisconsin with genetic research and cloning technology. And I really believe, Jim, sometime back in the 80s, there was just one guy who was the prototype to be the Wisconsin Badgers quarterback. And they just cloned that guy, and they've got dozens of them in a lab underneath Camp Randall Stadium, because almost the entire time you have watched Wisconsin football in your life. I'm not talking to just you, Jim. I'm talking to everybody in the range of my voice. They have had the same damn guy as their quarterback the entire time, except my theory is there was one bad batch, like one just didn't turn out properly, and that's why they had to go out and get Russell Wilson. There was something went bad with the Wisconsin clone between the 2010 and the 2011 season. What are we going to do? We don't have a clone that's ready to go for this season. We got to go try to go get a transfer guy. Because other than Russ Wilson, you can take any Wisconsin quarterback from the last 35 years, swap them out. They look the same. They play the same. It's just the same guy over and over and over again. And that's Braden Locke.
Yes. And you know what? If the original starter hadn't gotten injured and kept playing, he would have been the same guy too, Chris.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. 100%. Alex Van Dyke is Brooks Bollinger. That's probably why they went out and got him, right? It's all the same guy.
Even when they bring him in from outside. All right. Let's shift gears. Let's talk about Bo Prabhula and his performance. You mentioned, you know, after a couple of possessions, we still don't know if the guy can throw the ball. And I think it was they were so cautious with him at the beginning. And I'm just shouting at the TV, let him throw the ball. You're not going to win not letting him play quarterback. You got to let him throw the ball. And I think afterwards, once he got his feet under him, they allowed him to they open up the playbook enough to let him throw the ball. We found out he wasn't too bad throwing the ball, Chris.
Hey, man, with all due respect to the great Len Dykstra, who you and I both have a soft spot in our hearts for, Bo Prabhula's nickname could be Nails after that performance. I mean, just tough and gutsy. Sorry, I was about to say something, but then I was like, that might not be a good analogy for the radio. The testicular fortitude required to throw some of those balls he did, to me, that's what you want in a backup quarterback who's got to come in that kind of situation. I mean, a couple of times, man, he just stuck a pass in there to, you know, like Liam Clifford or Trey Wallace, and it was just like, that's a big boy throw that he had the confidence in himself to attempt, and he did it flawlessly. And then, you know, you could tell he had the trust of his teammates and command of the huddle. I think he was decisive with choosing where to go with the ball. He made good throws. He was impactful as a ball carrier. Man, just that kid who grew up a Penn State fan and has patiently waited for the opportunities to come his way made the most of them when they did on the road in Madison last weekend. And I could not be more complimentary of Bo and the way he performed, and Andy Kotelnicki, who I thought masterfully handled play calling duties in terms of setting his backup quarterback up to succeed and helping him, you know, do what he does the best.
It was great to watch. I'm going to throw another word out there for Bo Prabhula. I'm going to use the word winner. He's a winner. He will find a way to beat you. That's what winners do.
Yeah, cliche to say it at this point, but he sure reminds you a lot of another number nine, right?
Yes, he most certainly does. Just watching how he moves, yes. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, here was what the thought that was running through my head was something that you had said on this very show, Chris, which is, we both, I know, think very highly of Drew Aller, especially after the way he's played this year. But you've often said, why does Penn State not just go recruit the best dual threat quarterback they can? Because it would fit the kind of offense that James wants, that it appears Andy Kotelnicki could make use of those. I think we saw an example of that. And before we go too far down this line, let me just clarify here. No, there's not a quarterback controversy, okay?
No, absolutely not. Drew was dealing in the first half till he got
hurt. I got multiple notes from people. Quarterback controversy? No, there's not a quarterback controversy. But this game makes me feel better about the quarterback situation next year because I'm convinced Drew Aller's going to be a first round draft pick in the NFL.
Yeah.
Come next April.
Yeah. I don't. One thing that adds an element of stakes to this year, Jim, is that there is going to be a huge exodus of talent from Happy Valley after this season, because you recruit so well in a class like 2022, you set yourself up to have a lot of guys leave because they're going to be good enough to go to the NFL early. And that's going to happen after this season.
Yes. And it's most of the star power will be leaving. You know, when you talk Drew Aller, the two running backs, the tight end, Abdul Carter, Danai Dennison, you know, on and on and on. These players are going to move on. But it's going to become a Bo Prabhula's team next year. And I think we saw in this game that he's up to the task. He can be that main guy.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you would have asked me before Saturday, I would have said probably Grunkmeyer might has a good chance to pass him up. Now I think that's a different conversation for sure. But
I do too.
That's far off in the future.
Yes, that conversation came up, I think, from one of our listeners last week with an Ask Andy question. And I do think Bo answered a lot of questions with this game. All right, Chris, that's it for quarter number two. Quarter three, I've got a lot of little news and notes from the game I want to ask you about. We'll do that when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim, he's Chris. It's quarter three and we are talking Penn State football. Nice 28-13 win over Wisconsin in Madison. They easily covered the spread. For those who care about that.
Not just the 6.5, Jim. If you got in early before, Wisconsin looked pretty good against Northwestern and, everything, it drops down to 6.5. You even got, I think, the highest it ever went, I think, was 11.5, I want to say. So no matter where you got in, James knows the number.
And James takes care of us. That's what James does for us.
Zaki Wheatley, by the way, took great care of you, frankly. I mean, a good credit to Zaki for making a huge stop on fourth down as Wisconsin was driving for that garbage TD.
Yes, most definitely. But I'll tell you what, Jalen Reed with the interception, but oh my God, what a god-awful pass that was. What in the world was he thinking? Reed was just planted there the entire time, and he threw it right to him.
He's thrown a pick in every start so far this season, Braden.
Yes, Locke. Yes. And some of the other passes that he made just tells you, he could be starting for Akron next year. All right. A couple more things.
Joe Moorhead will turn him into a star, Jim. Yeah.
You mentioned earlier about we were talking about Ohio State and Nebraska and some of the officiating in that game. And I want to bring that up, and I will relate it to the Penn State-Wisconsin game in a second. But in that game, there was just a series of calls. One of them was the spot on a play, Chris.
Outrageous.
Not even close. And remember, we've had multiple like that with Penn State all the way this season, going back all the way to West Virginia.
Yep.
What in the world is going on this season? I don't really recall that egregious a spot ever. And now I feel like I've seen that happen like five times this season.
The one from the Ohio State-Nebraska game was absolutely outrageous. If you're listening to this, if you haven't seen it, trust me, you can find it very easily if you go Google Nebraska-Ohio State spot or something like that. It'll pop right up. It was so bad that it's to the point where it's like, if I were talking to the officiating crew, I would be like, guys, I almost hope for your sake that you are in fact on the take from the mob or taking orders from the conference office to help Ohio State or whatever. Because if you're not, if there's nothing untoward going on, if you're not breaking the law or taking marching orders from Tony Petitti or anything, it means you are so unfathomably bad at the basics of doing your job as to totally undermine the credibility of the entire game. It's just, it was so bad. It boggles the mind.
And Chris, what was the expression you gave? Don't attribute nefarious to something just
don't
be incompetence.
Attribute to malice what can better be explained by incompetence. That was incompetence manifest, that ball spot. Just insane. Insane. And if I can just go off on a short digression about that.
Please.
I've been saying this for years. I imagine there's probably some crossover in the audience who watches Josh Pate's college football show on YouTube. I am secure enough as somebody who has his own college football show that you can watch on YouTube. That's the obligatory PSU pregame show, which you can find on the For the Bloggy YouTube channel. Subscribe to For the Bloggy on YouTube. Josh Pate does a great, absolutely great college football show 3 times a week. He's a must watch if you're a big time college football fan. And he has picked up on something that I've been saying for years. It is ludicrous, both in the NFL and in college, that referee is not a full-time job. So it's nuts that these guys have so much power and so much influence on the outcome of the game, and they're not full-time. And it's also nuts that there's no accountability. Again, this goes to the NFL and to big-time college football. Everyone else is required to go out in front of the mics and answer tough questions about their performance. Coaches have to talk to the media. In the NFL, the players have to talk to the media. Well, remember Marshawn Lynch, I'm just here so I don't get fined. That's right. You get fined money if you don't talk to the press. It's part of your job. In college, you know, and by the way, credit to James Franklin for his apology for the way he handled the presser on Wednesday. I don't want to have a digression in the middle of a digression, but you got to do that. If you're James Franklin and you screw up, you know, you got to face the music. And it's nuts. It is nuts that there's absolutely no accountability for these guys. They don't have to stand in front of a thicket of reporters and answer questions. And there's no transparency into the way their jobs are evaluated. We will never find out from the Big Ten or anyone else how someone maybe sat in a room, showed those guys that tape, like you're watching film session on Sunday with the football team, and saying, what the hell were you guys doing? This is embarrassing. Do you know this is on national television? Do you know people can show this on the internet now and look at it? Like, this is embarrassing. You're all fired. You're fired. This is ludicrous. No, we'll never know. We'll never know. There's zero transparency, zero accountability. And these guys are part, they were like accountants and plumbers and stuff. I don't, it's nuts. The whole thing is crazy to me, and the fact that we just accept it as normal probably means that we're crazy too.
Well, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but the video review people could watch, they could stop the game also to say we need to review this, correct?
Well, I don't want to authoritatively say that's something they could intervene and review. I'm just not sure. You would think, you would certainly hope. That's a perfect example of something you could fix easily with video review. And you and I have talked about this before. If you can review it, you should be legally able to review it.
Right. And the fact is, yes, you can review the spot. You know, the question is, can the guy upstairs say, hey, stop?
Right. That's the thing I'm not positive about.
And the reason why I bring that up is not that it's egregious. It was awful. It was awful, the spot. But in watching a game in real time, live, you, that yellow line that's there for the first down is so helpful. I mean, the guy's entire body was past the yellow line. Okay.
It wasn't even close.
It was a no-brainer.
There was green on screen. You could see grass between the other side of the yellow line and that guy's backside. It was so obviously a fraud. I can't believe it. I can't believe it happened. Like I said, the most charitable explanation is that these refs were on the take from the mob.
Well, I'm sitting casually watching this game because I'm not it's vested in it the same way I am for Penn State, but I have the game on, relaxing, chilling out in my Barca lounger, and I instantly was like, that's a first down. How could it not be called a first down? So I would think if anybody's watching the game, like, you know, an official who could review this, they'd instantly say, whoa, stop. There's an issue here. And
let me ask you, Jim, just as an aside, were you like me deeply conflicted about who you were rooting for in that game?
Yes. Yeah. Because I know technically I'm supposed to root for Ohio State.
Correct.
Because I want Ohio, I want it to be a top five game.
It is awesome. It's awesome. We're having the first top five game in Beaver Stadium since the 99 Pigskin Classic against Arizona, which went very well for the Nittany Lions, by the way.
Very well.
But I can't do it. Constitutionally, I cannot watch a game like that and root for Ohio State.
Right. It was like you reprimanded me about rooting against USC. We obviously got to root for USC. It could have been a top 10 game. And I cannot find it within myself. There's just nowhere in my body that, just dig deep, Jim, dig deep. And you could find that place where you could root for Ohio State or Michigan or Notre Dame or the Cowboys or the Yankees. Sorry, just it can't happen.
Yeah.
Just it can't. I've reached a point, Chris, where I don't even try. Okay. And this is me acting as if it would make a difference. Okay. Oh, Jim, maybe if you root for the Buckeyes, you can make it happen. But just in my heart of hearts, I can't do that. So you were talking about digressing. And by the way, I'm going to want to later on ask you about James Franklin's apology. But the reason why I went down this rabbit hole about the is in the Penn State game. See, I'm going to circle back and tie it back in that first possession before the drop by Julian Fleming. I guess it was second down running play and nobody said anything. But I thought it was a terrible mark then also where they placed the ball. I thought he had the first down. And I haven't reviewed the tape yet. I haven't gone back to rewatch it. But at the moment, at the time, Chris, I thought he had the first down.
You know, the more I'm thinking about this, I am almost positive I've seen the Booth call down to review on those kind of bang, bang, is it or is it not a first down plays? And it is weird that you don't see it more frequently. Now, that does not stick out in my brain as one that I thought was especially egregious. But like I just said, you know, I was watching it at the Letterman's Lounge at the stadium, and there was a lot going on, and I was talking to people. Maybe I just missed it. But it is weird that you don't see the replay folks intervene more often if it looks like there maybe could be, well, you know, that could be a totally game-changing play if you get another set of downs.
Well, I'm assuming, Chris, that they can, because if you think about how often the offense races to the line of scrimmage to run a play before the review booth could do anything about it.
Yeah.
So that tells me that they probably could. But if the Penn State one probably was not that egregious. Certainly the booth didn't say, I mean, the announcing booth said nothing about it. Okay. But it was, and they didn't show a replay of it. Maybe it was Penn State was going quick, but it's one of the things I'm going to look for when I rewatch the game. But just that overall trend in football, you know, we mentioned it happening, Penn State, West Virginia. There was another game or two where it's happened, the Nebraska game where it happened. Is it just feels like it's happening so many more times, and it's not, you know, it's off a couple inches either way, which can make a difference, and you could tell. No, it's egregious. It's like a yard difference, Chris. That's 3 feet.
Yeah, yeah. That Ohio State one was off by a couple of yards.
Yes, yes, it was. All right, Chris, that's going to be it for this quarter. We've still got, what are we at? Well, that's 3 quarters. So we've got one more quarter to go. We're going to start talking some Ohio State when we get back.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. It's quarter number four. I think I got that correct, Chris. Quarter number four of our show. Before we start going down that Penn State football path, just want to remind you, big games coming up against Ohio State. Big noon kickoff, Chris. The following week, it's the whiteout with Washington. And if you're still looking for accommodations in State College, got the solution for you. That is gopsurv.com. This is where you drive your own car into town, and they've got an RV all set up, ready and waiting for you. Great facility. They have great games there. They have a pavilion, big screen TV. They have a place to get food there. You can also do cooking in your own RV. And maybe the best part about this is you don't have to worry about the hassle of parking at the stadium. They have a shuttle, takes you back and forth. You stay from Friday through Sunday. That's right. It's a whole weekend of tailgating. Check them out at gopsurv.com, or you can call 800-519-8467, and Mark will take really good care of you. All right, Chris, I said we'd talk about Ohio State, but I do want to get sidetracked one little item. You brought it up, James Franklin's apology for what happened at the media day last week. For those of you who didn't see it, and it did become a national story, two Penn State players got arraigned for sexual assault. It was that type of crime. They've been suspended from the team, from the school. And the athletic department put out a statement essentially saying, we're not going to say anything more. Here's the story. That's it. And before James met with the media, one of the players from the one of the people from the athletic department came out and said, there's a situation. We are not going to take any of those questions. James Franklin comes out. So what is the very first question? It's about this issue. And James just walked away, walked off. The spokesman comes back out and says, hey, we told you, no questions about that. James comes back out as if nothing had happened, goes on for there. Chris, first of all, I want to get your take on it. My take was it was an awful look. It looked terrible. James Franklin is the face of the program. He doesn't have to say anything that would get himself in trouble, but he could at least say, look, this happened. This is the situation. It's a legal matter. I can't give you a lot of details, but this, I'm saying this is what I can tell you, and that is it. I can't tell you anything more. Instead, he just walks away. Number one, I thought that was an awful look. Just real quick, I wanted to get your take on that. And then his apology after the Penn State-Wisconsin game, he apologized, said he didn't handle it well.
Yeah, well, if you followed me on any other platform at any point last week, you know I'm 100% with you, Jim. That was a really disappointing performance from James. I don't want to relitigate it further. I said I was basically done talking about it, and I am. I have not talked to a single person in person. I've been bombarded online with a bunch of anonymous accounts. But when I sit in a room with a human being, I haven't had a single person express any kind of opinion that's different. So that's where I'm at on that. And it's fine. Look, we're fallible. We're human beings. We make mistakes. And I give James Franklin a ton of credit for having the presence of mind to show some genuine contrition, admit he screwed up, apologize, and move on. That, to me, you want to talk about leadership? That's a lesson that is not just a great example for his players and for folks at Penn State, which is his behavior on Wednesday in that press conference was the opposite. But again, you fall down, you pick yourself back up. That's a lesson that we could all learn in leadership roles across society, to understand that sometimes you make a mistake and often it's as easy as just being a man and stepping up and apologizing and move on. And it's fine. I thought it was great. I give him a ton of credit for doing that. And since we're on the topic of James moving on from places where he's struggled and continuing to improve and grow as a coach, I harp on this all the time. The guy was in his early 40s when he took the Penn State job. So you would hope he was not fully formed as a head football coach and he continued to learn and get better. Kudos to him, man, for doing something he has not done at Penn State, which is go through a season with two bye weeks and finish perfect off both of them. James entered last Saturday against Wisconsin 4-8 off the bye, and 3-4 is a favorite. Those are bad numbers. And he went 0-2 off bye weeks in 2014 when you had kind of a sanctions hobbled roster. But that infamous 2019 loss at Minnesota, that was off the second bye week in the 2019 season and probably cost Penn State a playoff spot, almost certainly cost them a playoff spot. And so, I think he has shown growth in a variety of ways since he's been here at Penn State. And I want to give him credit for growth and improvement as a coach and leader off the field with the apology, but on the field as well. That was big for Penn State to get that win. Just again, we're gonna look back on this two-game stretch, and I hope three-game stretch, and say we got a string of classics, the kind of games you remember for a very long time.
I think he's already slayed a few of those dragons with the comeback against USC, yep. This performance off the bye, on the road, hustle environment, all that. I will throw in one thing about the apology. I think James is really smart. He realized this became a national story, and he looked bad in the national story. So I think that the apology was the cleanup needed to be done. I would have liked a little more of, okay, James, what exactly are you apologizing for? He never said, hey, I should not have walked away. I'm the leader of this program, so it's up to me to face the music, to say something.
Yeah, I mean, he did say the way I handled it was not good or something like that. I think that's fine.
I felt it could have been a bit better. So, and I think he, you know, also did the, well, there's nothing I could really say about it anyway. So,
yeah, but I mean, you're a tougher audience than I am. I mean, he doesn't need to do like a Cersei Lannister shame walk down the street. I mean, I thought what he said was fine, but what, you know, okay. Whatever.
So anyway, all right, let's spend some time on Ohio State. We saw them against Nebraska. And Chris, I had said this before. I feel like this is one of the first times in a while Penn State, with a healthy Drew Aller especially, Penn State has the better quarterback in this matchup. And just to add a little spice to this, Will Howard has to come out and say, well, Penn State didn't think I was good enough. They didn't offer me the scholarship. Yeah, Penn State and about 100 other, Power Five at the time schools didn't offer you a scholarship. That's why you ended up at Kansas State.
I also don't like that he said, well, and I guess we'll find out on Saturday. It's like, no, you're throwing to Ohio State's receiving corps, so no, we're not going to find out on Saturday whether you were good enough to play at Penn State. You know, there's probably like 50 quarterbacks you could pull off rosters right now, drop them into the situation Will Howard is in, and they would look a heck of a lot better in Columbus than they do at their current stop.
Chris, how critical will it be for Drew Aller to be healthy and play in this game?
Well, I mean, look, I am not super bullish on Penn State's chances regardless. As we sit here, it will be I don't think they have a great chance to win the football game either way. And I think their odds are better with Drew Aller. So it's very important. I don't know that it's impossible for Penn State to win with Bo Prabula. A lot of it is going to fall on the shoulders of the defense regardless, and their ability to contain Jeremiah Smith, frankly, along with the rest, and Quinshon Judkins and the rest of that Ohio State offense. But those are the two guys I think they really need to stop. But yeah, it's important. If you don't have Drew back, your chances go down appreciably.
I'm in agreement. And I also think, though, Chris, you talked about it earlier that this is Penn State kind of going into this game with house money. Lose this game, as a lot of people expect. Just take care of business the rest of the way. You're 11-1, and you probably get a home playoff game, and everybody is thrilled. So I think that same urgency to get Drew Aller onto the field is not there also, because if Bo Prabula has dynamic to play,
yeah,
it's house money, right?
Yeah, yeah. And there is something to be said, especially the way the Big Ten is shaping up, and what we really just don't know about the way the playoff committee is going to handle conference championship game losers, that, again, it might not be the worst thing in the world in terms of you want to host a playoff game in Beaver Stadium and have a favorable matchup. It might not be the worst thing in the world to be, just by virtue of the tiebreakers and everything, on the outside looking in of the Big Ten championship game. That could still work very favorably in terms of your postseason path. So, yeah, that dynamic is unique to this new format we have for the postseason this season. And again, to me, it's just great. It's freeing. It's a freeing feeling to not feel like the sword of Damocles is just hanging over your head for noon on Saturday. It's wonderful.
I agree with you. And look, I've been talking when the 12-team playoff was just a gleam in somebody's eye. I've been talking about getting a home playoff game at Beaver Stadium, okay? I want that badly. But don't misunderstand me to think that I want Penn State to lose this game so they're 11-1 and get the home playoff game. And we're going to have a lot of time to talk about how the playoff committee will treat a loss in the conference championship game. But watching this Ohio State team against Nebraska, and yes, it's week to week. These are young guys. It's a different team every week. But boy, this Ohio State team seems vulnerable for a team that's so talented.
Well, and their O-line's beat up. They got more banged up in that game against Nebraska. And Penn State's defense is just much faster, more athletic, more disruptive and opportunistic than Nebraska's at every level. So I think the chance for Penn State to put together its best game plan, and for, as they usually do under James, for the players to play at their top level, there's a chance for that defense to eat against that Ohio State offensive front.
It will be interesting to see. Denai Dennis Sutton was among the injured. It will be very nice to have him back. Those injuries are piling up for Penn State also in this game. But Chris, I just feel like this Penn State team is built differently, especially offensively. I'm not going to pick on the win yet, but I'm feeling pretty good about it. All right, Chris, I'm going overtime. That is it for the show. Thank you all for listening. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.